Greetings, fellow Portlanders. From the Emerson News Network, this is Legion of News.
From high above the milk packing district in the heart of beautiful southeast Portland, Oregon, this, my friends, is Legion of News, a one-hour distillation of all important knowledge from everywhere. My name is Rick Emerson alongside Don Taylor, who is, even now as I speak these words to you, readying information on a vast swath of happenings, including but not limited to the following.
A state trooper runs a red light and crashes into cars. A Happy Valley teenager admits a hate crime hoax. And a young woman sets the world record for eating chicken wings.
As always, my friends, have no doubt that this conglomeration of factual discourse and ideological screed will render you shocked, amazed, enraptured, and demonstrably more intelligent than when you began this hour. And now, without further ado, pay heed, for this is Legion of News.
Good afternoon and happy Labor Day. I'm Don Taylor, and this is absolutely everything you need to know for Monday, September 6th, 2010. An Oregon State trooper was cited after he ran a red light and crashed into two cars last week. Investigators said the crash involving Trooper Casey Brogdon happened at Shoals Ferry Road and Cascade Avenue in Beaverton last Friday. Beaverton police said Brogdon was not speeding, but was not using his lights or siren. He simply thought the light was green. The trooper and three others were taken to a hospital for treatment of minor injuries. Brogdon was given a $472 ticket for failing to obey a traffic control device. A 16-year-old son of a Happy Valley family was found to be responsible for racial graffiti and threats found at a home earlier this week.
The unhappiest valley of all.
Song Hun and his family told police they found a note on their house Monday that told them to leave. Quote, last warning, we will burn your house down if we have to, it said.
Okay.
Along with the note was a book of matches and a bottle full of gasoline, said Clackamas County Sheriff's spokesman, Detective Jim Strovic.
Is that in case they didn't understand what will burn your house down means?
Exactly.
Like if the T needed to be crossed for them just a little bit more?
And there was an arrow painted on the ground
to
it saying, with this.
Jesus.
Yeah. The house appeared to have been vandalized with spray-painted racial slurs. Clackamas County investigators said the boy was, quote, very remorseful about his conduct.
Really?
The 16-year-old did not realize the magnitude of these actions and was surprised at this response to this activity, Detective Gil Millett said. This child was distraught having to change school districts and apprehensive of the prospect of having to make new friends in a new school environment, and that's what generated these unfortunate acts.
Well, how did they... Now, does it say how they figured out who it was? Does it say how they identified the kid?
No.
All right.
I think if you're a 16-year-old and you're painting stuff on somebody's house, it's not that hard to be caught.
You're probably not that bright to begin with. This, by the way, this underscores something that somebody asked me last week. We have a, you know, we have our own sort of, I don't know, we have our own kind of lingo and lexicon that we embrace here. And, you know, a certain number of, I don't know, we have a kind of our own unique phraseology. And somebody asked me if I was intentionally mispronouncing the word Asians and saying Asians sort of rhymes with raisins. And the answer is yes. Yes, I do. That's one of those things that just started off as an occasional joke. It's just a thing I say every now and again. And now it's become a thing that I just say again and again as opposed to now and again.
Asians?
Asians. And that actually, and here's where that comes from. And this is actually, I'm glad you had this story today. Not because I'm happy with the increased amount of racial strife in the world, Don, but because it gives me a reminder to explain the derivation of the word Asians from Asians, which is a story that we had about, I don't know, maybe 2-3 years ago. And it was where some numbskull was all upset that, you know, his neighborhood was not the way he remembered it to be and that it was a much better place to live before those folks started moving in. And he decided to take it out on his neighbors, who I believe were from Vietnam, by spray painting on the front of their house, Asians go home. to Aza, apparently. A-S-A-N-S. Azans go home. And he actually used that spelling three different times. Once on a trash can, once on the sidewalk, once in the front of the house. So forever thereafter, they became Azans to me.
When I was a young lad in my early 20s, you know, I was a boy once. I don't know why I said that. But there was a little family-owned market owned by this Asian family. And we used to go there because they had cheap Chinese food. It was, you know, this crazy, one of those crazy neighborhood grocery marts where everything on the shelves, some of it had been there for like 30 years. Like, I bought a packet of Peter Mac's book covers for like the original, it was still stickered like 15 cents.
Awesome.
And but they had a little deli counter and they made Chinese food and it was really good and it was really cheap. But the sign on the front door said Chine's food. So we always called it Chine's food. You want to go get Chine's food? I could go for some Chine's food. Wait, and then I thought about it later and realized if they were actually Chinese, you'd think they would know how to spell that.
Well, wait a minute. Now you're blowing my mind. Maybe not, though, because in that whole thing where it transitions from, because it's a character-based language that they were using.
Perhaps.
And then they've gone to our, it's not Arabic. Is it Arabic? Is it our numbers Arabic or our letters Arabic? There's something in our language that is derived from the Arab way of depiction.
Wow, I feel really stupid right now. I have no idea.
I believe it's numbers. It doesn't really matter. This is Dawn Taylor at the Legion of News News Desk.
We're not even going to try and figure that out.
No. You know, because I realized as I was asking the question, I realized that I didn't care all that much.
Okay.
Let me just note real quickly, it is Labor Day, so we are here. We are live because Rick Emerson cares about you individually and collectively. Less so individually than collectively. Sort of as a mass. Sort of as one thriving, writhing sort of multitude. It is Labor Day. We are here. We are live. You can get the show on your mobile device as well. It's mobile.pdx.fm. Mobile.pdx.fm. And if you want to catch it in archived form, you can do that later on at legionofnews.com, here at pdx.fm, or at iTunes. This is Dawn Taylor.
Diminutive Sonia the Black Widow Thomas set a world record in winning the 2010 U.S. Chicken Wing Eating Competition in Buffalo, New York, for the fourth year in a row, by downing 181 wings, or 4.86 pounds, in 12 minutes.
That seems dangerous. That seems like a way that you almost certainly get a bone caught in your throat.
She beat out Joey Jaws Chestnut, the winner of the last four Nathan's Hot Dog Eating Competitions at Coney Island, New York.
But chicken wings aren't really his thing. It's not really that's not his forte when it comes to professional eating.
She didn't beat him by much, though. He ate 4.61 pounds of chicken wings.
Do you ever think that the likelihood of him taking a finger off is not, you know, small? That's one of those things that seems like an inevitability when you really ponder it.
Well, I think that's why it's, you know, it's a skill. You have to train it for it. That's why it's a sport. If anyone could just do it without biting off their fingers or vomiting all over everyone, then it wouldn't actually be competitive. It would just be something people could do.
No, I guess that's true. I guess something that anybody can do isn't a sport, much less a competition.
Exactly.
Well noted.
Thank you.
All right.
I'm savoring the victory, she said, because finishing ahead of Joey in any food may never happen again. Before today, it had been well over 2 years since I earned a victory over him.
I wonder if they could do a thing where they just measure your blood pressure or something. Or just, you know, your vital signs as you're just filling yourself up with sort of a gelatinous, grease-covered chicken meal.
Well, since there is the, it is the competitive eating league or whatever the hell it's called that the guy owns, that they all work for him like some giant food-eating mafia. I wonder if they do actually have doctors on staff that check them out and do things.
Yeah, but I can't imagine that the doctors are, A, I mean, this is just my observation. I can't imagine the doctors are all that reputable, or B, I mean, really, honestly, what kind of self-respecting doctor, what kind of Hippocratic physician would say to himself, you know, what I'm going to do is I'm going to just go hang in a place now where a guy is going to ingest 400,000 calories of birthday cake followed by 57 hot dogs. I'm a doctor.
They're like those doctors that you see in the old boxing movies where they're like going, Joey, I got to tell you, if you eat any more hot dogs, it could kill you. But, Doc, I got to make this one last bout. Okay, well, I'll do what I can for you, but I'm telling you, this is on you.
It's some doctor played by Lee Marvin, and the doctor's telling everybody to leave the room because he's going to slip him the juice. All right.
Could you bump me up a little while you have your finger on that?
I've noticed that the control board was a little. We were tweaking the control board settings yesterday, and so I'm trying to get these back to sort of where they're zeroed out a little bit.
Well, I noticed you also have a tendency to keep my mic lower than yours, which I'm sure is not deliberate in any way.
Sure.
As if, like,
it is,
you know,
deliberate.
It makes your voice louder than mine.
It is deliberate, but for none of the reasons you might think, you whore. It is because I have a tendency to... I project my voice sometimes and at a distance that is less than you. In other words, you're about 6 inches away from the mic sometimes. I have this thing where I get right up on the mic like this. And so I've learned that I can occasionally get a little fuzzy there. So
you turn yours up even louder then?
No, but I've tried to compensate for that, though, by pulling way back is my point. So I'm trying to train myself out of swallowing the mic.
So it's a psychological thing. You turn yours up and then you look down and you go, oh, it's up higher. I better not do that.
Well, because if I get too close, then again, it gets the sort of, you know, anyway.
So it's not, again, to...
get off my back! That's what I'm trying to say to you right now. Trying to say, just let a brother be, all right? All right, here's Dawn Taylor.
This Labor Day, which would be today, don't be surprised to see celebrities from the world of entertainment, sports broadcasting, and more tweeting about the benefits of being union members.
Okay.
AFTRA, the American Federation of Television and Radio Artists, is using the social networking site Twitter to celebrate unions. Bob Butler, an award-winning broadcaster and vice president with AFTRA, says people sometimes fail to realize who wide-reaching the union is.
Really? Is this tweet? All right, let's see here.
Matt Damon, you know, Tom Hanks. These are all members of AFTRA.
Matt Damon.
You know, all of your big recording artists are all members of AFTRA. The people that you see on All My Children, members of AFTRA.
Really? Is that, do you really want to end on All My Children? Is that the, of the vast swath of people you could have mentioned, is that the tag you want to go
out on? That busker tap dancing for quarters on the subway, member of AFTRA.
All right.
Butler, an award-winning broadcaster and vice president, says there are many advantages to being a union member.
List some of those advantages now without looking at the piece of paper, Don. Let's see.
Well, contract negotiations.
Okay.
All your benefits are provided by the union, so they're portable. You can carry them around with you. It's not like you go to work for somebody and you leave that job and you leave your benefits behind and your 401k behind. Here, your retirement stays with you no matter where you go.
Right. Oh, he said portable. I snuffed there because I thought he said affordable.
I thought you said, okay.
Because yeah. I have friends that are members of the Screen Actors Guild, and there's this whole tiered system of if your benefits cost a certain amount based on how much you actually work and blah, blah, blah. And they're still really expensive. Your copay on your insurance, it's really good insurance through the Screen Actors Guild, but it's also, it ain't cheap.
This is one of those things where, the Screen Actors Guild and AFTRA, and one of them is sort of easier to get into than the other. I think maybe it's AFTRA that's easier to get into. And then SAG, no. I think it's SAG, it's like being a Mason or something. I think you actually have to be invited. I think it's which I think is that because Tim is a member of SAG, Tim Riley, and I think that, but I think it is some jazz where it's like you got to have a guy on the inside who will like vouch for you or something.
Yeah, because it's one of those catch-22 things where you can't get certain jobs unless you're a member of the Screen Actors Guild, but you can't become a member of the Screen Actors Guild until you have a certain number of high-profile jobs on your resume.
And there's I think the deal I think with some of those unions is that they will sort of spot you, like they'll comp you X number of jobs.
You know that from your business.
That is right, because, and sometimes the job will say, like, you know, this is a union job. However, if you are not a union member, they'll say basically you get five free ones. That it's a union gig, and if you are not a member of the union, then like you can do this like five times. But at the fifth time, that is when you will come to the fork in the road of either joining the union to continue, like to get your sixth job. It's sort of like it's like a piece of demo software that you get to use for 30 days or for 10 uses, and at the end of that, they say, "Would you like to keep using this?" Okay, fantastic. $14.95, please. That's how some of the acting gigs are, where you can act five times, but then if you want the sixth acting job, then a guy shows up and he makes you sign on the thing or whatever. And I'm sort of jaded about this, I guess, because also I was a member of the IBEW, which is the most, in my experience anyway, is just the most useless union on God's green earth. And they would just jack me.
You said that, and I just thought IBS, which means irritable bowel syndrome.
I would say that irritable bowel syndrome at least has a demonstrable effect. I mean, you can actually see what that's doing, right? You can you can see the outcome and the result. Whereas with the IBW, not so much. The outcome and the result was just a large hole in my check every 2 weeks where the union fees would have been if they had not been stolen, tithed, whatever, given by me. And then, of course, there's the Writers Guild of America, which is just, I mean, the Writers Guild of America, their logo ought to just be like a pair of hands grasping onto a pair of ankles. That's just my opinion, as protected by the Constitution. Here's Don Taylor. Happy Labor Day.
Last Monday night, a man named Brock Stainbrook walked into a downtown 7-Eleven. I'm not sure what town this is.
Brock Stainbrook?
But his name is Brock Stainbrook.
Okay.
I missed what city this is. I can't tell this story because this is terribly written and I don't have enough information. This is going into the side pile so that we will share this later after I research it a bit.
I want to know what it is now because now you've teased
it. He assaulted a guy at an employee at a 7-Eleven for wearing a turban and called him a terrorist.
All right.
Well, but it's a horribly written story, and so I don't have what city it is or a lot of.
So you're lacking the pertinent information that would be
required. I am, and I am not going to shortchange our audience.
No, it's not what you do.
Giving them incomplete news.
No. You are all about professionalism.
I am. Thank you very much.
You are listening to Legion of News right here at PDX.FM. Don't forget, we're going to be available later on today. This program will be downloadable from iTunes. Also at PDX.FM and LegionofNews.com. The show is brought to you by one of our fine business partners, The Cleaning Solution, in the person of Michael Beatty. That is the proprietor, 971-533-3211. 971-533-3211. And so if you are looking around your home and deciding that it's come time to spruce the place up, let's say, just to give your carpet a good... Well, it wouldn't be a spring cleaning because now we're heading into fall, right? So...
A fall cleaning,
I guess,
perhaps.
It'd be a fall cleaning. Every season brings its own kind of muck and dirt. You're going to head into the winter, you might say, and you're going to be tracking in, maybe mud or snow. But if it's been summertime, you've been spending... I mean, even with this sort of... I don't know, quasi-summer that we've been having. If you're spending any amount of time outdoors, it's like you come in, you're bringing, grass clippings and stuff from the lawn, you get dirt, and you're just sweaty, and, your dogs are at the park with you, and they're running around, and God only knows what they're getting into. And then they're coming back into the house, and everything just sort of gets tracked in there. But, of course, because you've been out all day, that is the time when you least feel like cleaning the carpet yourself. And so, as a result, over the course of 30, 60, 90 days, carpet just gets a sort of brownish, grimish tint to it. So get that taken care of so you can go into fall and actually have the carpet looking good, because you're going to be spending more time indoors. You don't want to be looking at the carpet that's just all full of, it's all full of dirt and whatnot. 971-533-3211. They can do the same thing for your business or office as well. 971-533-3211. Michael Beatty is the proprietor of The Cleaning Solution. Please tell him you heard it here. This is Don Taylor.
A Portland man is currently attempting to beat the world record score for the classic Atari game Missile Command. Bill Carlton has been playing for 24 consecutive hours in the basement of a Hillsborough home on an arcade machine, and he's expected to play through today. The current record is 80.3 million points, a record set in December 1982 by Victor Ali, according to the game scoring authority Twin Galaxies. According to the organization's website, Carlton's previous best was 45.8 million points, set in 2008. Carlton is one of the leading players of Missile Command. He was the subject of a movie called High Score, which followed a previous attempt to beat the record. He is vying for the new record in the same Hillsborough home in which John McAllister beat the Asteroids world record in April.
Is it considered a lucky home or something?
May just be a basement full of arcade games.
Just a basement full of nerds. I've interviewed that guy, William Carlton. We have an interview with him somewhere in my archives. Maybe I will dig that up and put it in the Rick Emerson Show archives weekend.
Maybe if he actually beats it, we could invite him in again.
I've got actually a copy of that documentary, too, but I'm embarrassed to say this. I'm not even sure that I actually watched it because it came out around the same time as the King of Kong thing. And I think in my head somehow I watched one and I think I incorrectly thought that I had watched them both. And so it just went in the pile of – I have this pile of DVDs that are yet to be viewed. Not unlike Bride of Frankenstein, it sat there for a while. And I think I may have put it in the basement believing that I've already viewed it, but maybe I haven't. The thing about Missile Command is I think the deal with this guy, William Carlton, is that he attempted to beat the record once before, but the machine actually busted.
That would be frustrating and sad.
Yeah, and it wasn't like one of those things you heard about when you were a kid where he got to 9 jillion points and the machine couldn't take it and had a nervous breakdown and they started to smoke, which is the thing we were always told that on Pac-Man or something that you could, there's no way you can get to a jillion points and, whatever the point system, that they were using in the game. There was always some number of digits past which the game could not go, and if you tried, it would just... And there was always a Lou Gossett Jr. guy there with a cigar who would just say, "I was here back in '05. I saw a guy get to 10 million once. The machine was never the same after that, nor was that man." And then he would just sort of slink away. That didn't sound at all like Lou Gossett Jr. That's not the point. The point is that I think he just overheated the thing because he had played it for so long. There's just something, just one of the, you know, the motherboard or something just went out. So.
And then Robert Preston showed up and took him away to a secret alien missile command base.
Yes, he did.
Because he was the best missile command player in the entire world. Universe.
Robert Preston playing what character?
I can't remember his name.
Fail. Well, and you remember Robert Preston as the actor. You don't remember the name of the character. Can I tell you?
That's the kind of nerd I am. I'm an actor nerd, not a character. What?
Do you want to think on it? Or,
no, no, tell me. What is it?
Alpha Centauri. Well, Centauri. Yeah, he didn't call himself Alpha Centauri, I guess, but I assume that was his full name. Centauri, my boy!
My husband is probably listening to this somewhere right now and just, like, yelling.
Centauri!
Yeah. God, I can't believe I married you!
Here's the thing about that movie, is if you can get past the fact that it's A, a real Star Wars ripoff, and B, that the effects, while made on a Cray supercomputer, do look very, I mean, they're sort of, they look like rough sketches of effects from Star Trek The Next Generation. It's actually not a bad film. Last Starfighter actually, it actually holds up fairly well. And I don't mean that in a sort of, you know, for what it is kind of way. I mean, it's actually a decent, enjoyable film. Especially, what's his name, Dan Herlihy?
Yes.
Who plays Grig? Man, that guy right there is worth the price of admission. Here's Don Taylor.
Tropical storm Hermine is gaining strength as it continues to move towards the Texas-Mexico border.
Seems like you're leaving some letters out of that name.
It says Hermine.
It's not Hermione, and it's not her...
This came across my desk, and it just said Hermine.
H-E-R-M-I-N-E.
And you gave it to me, so if it's wrong...
But, I mean, is there some alternate spelling we've seen somewhere?
It's H-E-R-M-I-N-E. No, that's how it is.
Hermine.
Hermine.
Okay. Isn't that some sort of like a... Isn't that like a mink or a ferret or something?
Herman? No, that's... You're thinking ermine.
Oh, okay.
Which is what this word is, only with an H on the front.
Got it.
So let's start saying Herman.
Okay.
Brownsville, Texas Mayor Pat Ahumada. That seems like an odd name for someone who's the mayor of Brownsville, Texas, doesn't it?
Why is that, Dawn?
Because it sounds Asian.
Right, why can't an Asian man be the mayor of Brownsville, Texas, Dawn?
I'm not saying he can't. I'm just saying that my preconceptions about Texas lead me to believe that that it would be unlikely that people in Texas would vote for an Asian man for a thing. But good for you, Brownsville, Texas.
Okay.
Bravo.
Way to pull it out of the end. There are progressive people there.
Yeah. He says that the city is prepared for the storm.
This is...
Herman.
Let's see if I've got this.
We got the command center ready to kick into gear. We got public works out and about, setting up pumps.
All right, wait a minute. What is this guy's name?
Pat Ahumada.
Okay, that is, I don't know, Asian in some way, perhaps Hawaiian.
Yeah.
He's in
Texas. Well, he lives in Texas, so he's going to sound like a Texas guy.
No, but it's not just that he's in Texas. Does he not sound as though he has a Hispanic accent?
We got the command center ready to kick into gear. We got public works out and about.
I believe he actually is.
For those areas that are known to us as flood. The concerns are the rains and the people to be prepared, stay indoors.
Okay. All right,
yeah, so, you know, Brownsville, Texas, not as progressive as you might think.
Well,
but,
I mean.
You know, it sounds like an Asian name, but really it's a Hispanic name.
Boy, he looks like a guy who could work you over.
Oh, yeah, he looks mean.
He looks like a guy
tough.
That could break your bones, but good. All right.
Yeah.
Well, all right.
Don't cross Pat Ahumada. He says teams are ready to assist, and public works officials are setting up pumps in flood-prone areas.
Fortunately, this storm is developing very fast, and it'll go through here real quickly. It doesn't have much time to get garner strength, so we expect minimal damage. But we should be prepared for maybe a Category 1 hurricane.
All right, so this is in Texas, right?
His voice sounds really familiar to me, and I can't place the actor whose voice that is.
Well, let's try it one more time here. Hold on.
Fortunately, this storm is developing very fast, and it'll go through here real quickly. It doesn't have much time to get garner strength, so we expect minimal damage.
Yeah. It sounds like
prepared for maybe a Category 1.
The comedian George Lopez.
Nah, I could see that maybe. It's the combination of the accent and he's got that sort of back of the throat baritone thing going on. This is Don Taylor at the Legion of News news desk as we continue our live Labor Day installment of Legion of News.
Crews had to rappel down to the body of a man found Saturday at the base of Butte Creek Falls east of Silverton. The body of Frank Allerid, 42 of Salem, was spotted by a hiker about 10:30 a.m. The manner of death appears to be a fall from the top of the 78-foot-tall falls, said Marion County Sheriff's Office spokesman Don Thompson. Rescue crews from six agencies were involved in the recovery. They had to rappel from 150 to 200 feet down a ravine to reach the body. The body was recovered about 7 p.m. Volunteers continue to comb the area, searching for clues on the cause of death. And an autopsy is scheduled for Sunday.
And this is in Silverton?
This is in Silverton.
But
it looks like he fell off the top of Butte Creek Falls.
Silverton is just full of things you could fall off of. I mean, I guess Oregon is in general. One could argue the earth is full of things you could fall off. But in Silverton, it almost is sort of like a... It's just sort of like in an aggressively Darwinian way because they don't bother to actually block most of that stuff off. I think they figure that you're just sort of like, it's up to you, you know, to pay attention when you hear the sound of roaring water somewhere and just to do your best not to, you know, plummet off.
Well, I think I've mentioned this to you in the past. When I first moved here from Southern California, of course, being very litigious, California having a very well-funded highway program and public works and stuff. And so, like, anything that could possibly, like, hurt you and that the state or a city or whatever could get sued is generally, like, fenced off or barricaded or whatever. Every highway, you know, has plenty of guard rails along the sides. Yeah, you can't get near anything. I move here to Portland, and I start, like, looking around at the local sites and, you know, take the drive up to the gorge and pull off and go look at the waterfalls. And it's like, those things are just right there.
Oh, yeah.
You could just walk right up, you could just walk right under there and get killed.
Yeah, no, you can't. In fact, up until a couple years ago, and I think it has changed now, but up until a few years ago, you could actually go to Multnomah Falls, and you could just wade out into the area where it comes sort of crashing down. I mean, there's actually several levels. There's a level way up at the top of the mountain. And then there's that mid-range level, which is the... You've been to Multnomah Falls, right?
Yeah.
There's that mid-range level, which is where you walk up to the bridge, and it's the level that the bridge looks out at. And that mid-level, it comes down, and then it fills a sort of lake, and then it falls down to a lower level, which is down, I think, you know, there's a sort of the ground level. And that mid-level, though, up at the bridge... That lake was not fenced off. It wasn't closed. It wasn't blocked off in any way. And my brother and I don't know what the hell we were thinking. I mean, especially because I was actually, I think I was technically an adult at that time. I think I might have been, Jesus, I was like 19. But we were in Seattle, and then we were in Seattle to see Guns N' Roses, I think. And then we were driving back. I was driving him back to Kennewick, and it was really, really hot. And so we'd stop just to sort of walk up there and just get the waterfall spray on us just to cool off a bit. And we didn't have any air conditioning, and it was the middle of summer and whatever. But I think he had the idea in his head that he was going to wade out to, like, the middle of the lake that's up at that middle bridge level on Multnomah Falls. And for some reason, I didn't stop him. It's entirely possible I was just, you know, intrigued to see what would happen and figured that, you know, I don't want to do it myself. I'll just watch him. And he went right out there and stood underneath Multnomah Falls as it was, like, down on him. And miraculously, was just not sort of swept out over, like, and down the falls to the lower level. I don't know how I would explain that to my mother. I mean, there's not really any sort of... I would have had to have just completely fabricated a whole, like, I was staying in the car, taking a nap, and when I looked up, he was gone. But there was just nothing to stop you from doing that. They may have stopped you. Like, at this point, they may have a fence up, because I think a guy actually got swept off the next summer. But even then, I mean, that's what it takes. Like, it takes 10 or 15 people getting hosed in a place.
Yeah, we don't seem to pay too much heed to that here. There's this naive assumption that people will somehow just not kill themselves. We have the number of roads that you drive on here that have, like, no street lights at night.
Oh, yeah.
And just drop off a sheer cliff and there's no guardrails or anything. Is it Lovejoy Fountain on the west side that's, like, these multiple layers of stuff made out of sharp edged ceramic tile?
Yes, it is.
And they let people just climb on it,
frolic on it,
in it, and dangle their feet off the side. And every time I see that, I just go, wow, that is just a million-dollar city lawsuit just waiting to happen.
Yeah, Portland is like one giant game of mousetrap. This is Don Taylor.
Let's do the science.
Here's your science. It's on the march on this Labor Day. It is Monday, September 6th, 2010. This is Legion of News.
A chemistry team may have found the key to producing a plastic that can heal itself. Graduate student Jeremy Lenhart was testing the limits of polymers, molecules that form the basis for materials in our daily lives, such as silicon, rubber, and neoprene, in the chemistry lab at Duke University in North Carolina. Working his way through a library of polymers, Mr. Lenhart stumbled across one particular species that reacted bizarrely. The polymers contained ring-shaped molecules called gemdifluorocyclopropanes.
Well done.
Which, when stretched, remained in that state for much longer than expected before shrinking back to even smaller rings. The more they were stretched, the smaller they got. To come across this discovery was a bit like having Christmas in July, he said, and then August, and then September. I ran up to my colleague's office and said, Steve, something funny is going on here. Look at this. Which is all well and good if you've got a chemistry degree and understand the importance of transition states. Mr. Craig said it was far too early to predict how the discovery would impact our daily lives and was reluctant to speculate, but he did anyway. Imagine that when small holes are formed in a piece of stretched plastic, the molecules in the plastic around it have gone into this overstretched state so that once the stretching is over, they pull back even closer than before and help to mend the hole.
All right, now, if you pair this with that story we had last week about how NASA has a team of robots that are going off into space to do, it was something unnerving. I don't remember what the hell they were doing. They were robots that were going up to the space station to do something, I presume, that will lead to evil. If you match that with your story about plastics that can heal themselves, I mean, I think we all see where this is going, and that is the...
Skynet.
That's what I'm saying. I would like to see an actual scientist, I mean, read, not us, someone who actually understands science doing a complete and a comprehensive assessment of inventions or advances that we've had in science recently that would theoretically be part of what Skynet would need. It would need to exist. So, in other words, if Skynet was going to happen the way it's depicted in Terminator, the guy would say, well, you would need the following, like, 70 things to make that work. And then figured how many of those things we now have. A self-healing polymer, for example. Or a robot that can create more of its kind and teach them to operate, like we had last week from NASA. I'm saying I think we might be closer to that than people really realize.
Traditional methods of evaluating dogs for hip dysplasia risk may miss 80% of cases, according to a new study. Hip dysplasia is a painful joint disease that can cause limping and soreness. As the disease develops, the dog may be unable to walk on its own. Large breeds are at higher risk for hip dysplasia, perhaps because their joints bear more weight. Because hip dysplasia is inherited, purebreds with their limited gene pool are also at higher risk for the disease than mutts. Reputable breeders get their dogs checked for hip dysplasia risk before mating them, but the new study casts doubt on the current methods for evaluating that risk. We believe many veterinarians are not using the best test to control a disease, University of Pennsylvania veterinary surgeon Gail Smith said in a statement. In many ways, this is an animal welfare issue. The study pitted the traditional method of evaluating a potential breeding dog with a method patented by University of Pennsylvania called PenHip. In both methods, x-rays of the dog's hips are analyzed for arthritis and laxity, or looseness, of the joints. The looser the joints, the higher the risk of later dysplasia. PenHip uses different x-ray viewpoints than the traditional method, allowing veterinarians to predict later arthritis and hip dysplasia in puppies as young as 16 weeks. Previous studies have shown the PenHip to be very reliable. The current study examined 439 dogs, many of which were dysplasia-prone breeds like German Shepherds, Labrador Retrievers, Golden Retrievers, and Rottweilers. All of the dogs that scored as having dysplasia by traditional metrics were also found to have dysplasia, according to PenHip. But 52% of the dogs whose hips would score an excellent rating using traditional methods were also in the at-risk category, according to
PenHip. Does this mean that because you had hip issues that you are a purebred, that you are your gene pool is flawless and without fault?
I wish that was the case, but really, me personally, I inherited every single thing that both of my parents had wrong with them. You know, skin issues, bad teeth.
You are the wretched refuse.
Arthritis. Yeah, I am a poor genetic risk, basically. It's like, it's a good thing I chose not to breed, because honestly, I would probably give birth to like a flipper baby with five eyes.
Okay. She's Dawn Taylor. There you go.
Anyway, dog hip dysplasia thing.
Fantastic.
That seemed a lot more interesting when I was reading it just quietly to myself than before I started reading it out loud.
That's often the case with these things.
That sometimes happens.
You're listening to Legion of News right here at PDX.FM. Don't forget this program is available via iTunes later on today. You can also get it at legionofnews.com. Don't forget the Rick Emerson Show is coming up today at 1 p.m. or thereabouts. And In case you are wondering what is on the Rick Emerson radio program, we have
I am.
That's actually today, right?
It is indeed.
So we have a double snuff watch, not just a single. We actually have a double snuff watch coming up today.
Yes.
Corpse watch on the way today. Job watch on the way, and our special interview with Mr. Dave Mustaine of Megadeth. So that is happening a little bit after 1 o'clock in our live Labor Day show. An interview
Dave
with Dave. Are you just doing my impression of Dave Mustaine?
I am. I'm imitating your imitation of
Which
Dave
was
Mustaine.
Terrible, by the way. My imitation of Dave Mustaine on Friday was awful. The reason I do that is because here's the funny thing is I think that your imitation of my imitation of Dave Mustaine, you are actually imitating me imitating, of all people, Beavis. So then it's a cartoon character who's just doing it the way that Mike Judge would do it. And it's all just based on this one Megadeth video called Sweating Bullets, which is not even really like a representative vocal style because he does the whole song in that weird teeth clenched thing where it's a whole conversation between like the two sides of himself. And, he does this whole, hello, me. And it's like he's just like, it's like he's just put a bunch of polygrip into his gums or something. Anyway, so Dave Mustaine from Megadeth coming up today in the 1 o'clock hour. Tomorrow, sci-fi fantasy author Terry Brooks. It's all very exciting. If you are subscribing to the Rick Emerson radio program, you can hear that today and any time of your choosing. It runs 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, the live stream does. And, of course, there's the mobile stream as well. That's at mobile.rickemerson.com. If you are not a subscriber, shame! Shame on you. You can subscribe. You can subscribe right now. And if you are already subscribing, but you know somebody who is not, if you have a friend, an acquaintance, a loved one, a business associate, perhaps a random stranger who's shown you just the smallest kindness on a city street and how you need to repay them, you can do that using the Rick Emerson Grant. That is done in partnership with our friends at New Millennium Landscape and Maintenance. We are giving away 10 one-month subscriptions to the Rick Emerson radio program every month. Here's how you do it. You just leave a voicemail at 503-505-6964, a voicemail of no more than 2 minutes in length. 503-505-6964, a voicemail explaining why you or somebody you know needs a one-month subscription to the Rick Emerson radio program, and we will be giving away 10 of those every single month. That is, again, courtesy of New Millennium Landscape and Maintenance. Find out more about that at rickemerson.com. This is Don Taylor.
The pygmy whale that washed up around 10 a.m. in Jensen Beach, Florida, Thursday morning, was euthanized. The whale was found alive and was rushed to the Harbor Ranch Oceanographic Institute. It weighed 873 pounds. The necropsy will happen Friday. It's expected to take 8 hours. Examiners will look at all parts of the whale to determine how it died and more about its species. Steve McCulloch from Harbor Oceanographic Institute said the whale was, quote, probably stranded due to illness or injury, perhaps, but this species of whale has a cardiac disease known as cardiac myopathy.
This isn't that the whale that they blew up the other day, is
No,
it?
This is a completely different whale.
All right, okay.
And they didn't say how they euthanized this whale, but I don't believe explosives were involved in this case.
No, I like to think that we have sort of the trademark on that. I mean, that we're really the only people that can do that correctly.
Well, except was it New Zealand that they did that? Because we just read last week.
I thought that was here as well, though. I thought that was the
that
hook
was like
of the story.
New Zealand or something.
Oh, that's less interesting. Now I thought that was so.
No.
In other words, we had the vastly unsuccessful or incredibly successful whale explosion years ago.
I don't believe anyone's blowing up any more whales in Oregon ever.
It was something that we considered a challenge now. You know, like we had to, like we were going to learn from our, that really, when you think about it, that we were the most qualified to blow up a whale because we'd had this horrible disaster. And so we had learned, we really, you know, through trial and error, I mean, on a scale that I don't think anybody has ever even attempted, had figured out the proper way to blow a whale into tiny little pieces.
We know how to not blow up a whale.
I suppose. Here's Don Taylor.
A Northeast Portland family said they plan to donate a majority of the proceeds from a Saturday yard sale to a woman who was doused in acid by a stranger. Denise Lewis and Malaya Johnson said their sale on Northeast 114th Avenue and Shaver Street had already been planned when they heard about Bethany Storrow and decided to contribute. Storrow, 28, was attacked by a woman as she walked into a Vancouver Starbucks on Monday. Police have since released a sketch of the woman with her big, crazy alien eyes. Like I said, I don't know her, but I feel she needs help, Lewis said, and so that's why I'm doing this. Johnson added, I imagine if it were me, I'd be terrified to even go outside. But she's staying so positive, and I truly admire that.
Yeah, there's this this picture of her that was in, I think it was the paper on maybe Saturday, the Oregonian had that. And it's It's weird because
the before and after side by side thing.
Well, just showing her in bed where she's all, you know, burned up, and it doesn't really look like the way you think it would look. I guess I hadn't really ever considered what an acid burn would look like. It looks like frostbite.
Yeah.
Where, you know, like with frostbite, you go all gray. And that was sort of the thing with her. I guess I maybe expected it to be sort of blackened or whatever, because you think burning, but I guess when I think burning, I think flame.
Yeah there's the...
And it really wasn't so much flame as it was just sort of like a chemical burning, so which has a different kind of color going on. So.
Or not.
Are you attempting to show me something?
I was trying to pull up the picture, of her, with her. Yeah, it's just, she looked kind of charred.
Yeah, I mean, it's just, it sort of looked like she was that tree guy who was covered with mold. That guy that lived in the Philippines or something, and he was just, like gradually turning into bark. That's
of course, now
like.
I think she's completely swathed in bandages, though, because I saw something yesterday.
Was it the press conference?
Yeah.
Where she's there, and it looks like she's at, she's in a full body cast almost.
Yeah, and that's kind of weird because they had the pictures of her before when they actually showed you.
That must be before they started doing like the dermabrasion or whatever, though, because then it's like I think they got to put the bandages on you.
For some reason, when I went to a Google search to look this picture up, I didn't come up with any pictures of her. I did come up with a picture of Ozzy Osbourne and Kermit the Frog, however.
Best not to think about what that might imply.
And it looks like he's trying to bite Kermit's head.
It's Labor Day. We're live. It is Legion of News. This is Don Taylor.
The Seattle Department of Transportation is not laughing after one of their construction signs in West Seattle was hacked to read, "Eat My Shorts." Drivers headed down Southwest Dawson Street couldn't help but check out the sign Sunday afternoon. SDOT says this is the first time in the last 3 years one of their signs has been hacked. "For us in Seattle, it's very rare," said spokesman Rich Sheridan. "All the devices are locked with either a key lock or padlock, so they're physically secured." A crew fixed the sign late Sunday afternoon, but for a while at least, residents who lived nearby enjoyed it. "I just thought it was absurd," said Jeffrey Garza. "What was funny about it is, at first I was like, of course that's what it should say. Then I was like, wait, that traffic sign just told me to eat my shorts. And I just loved it. It's very comical."
The common man, ladies and gentlemen, giving his thoughts in a news story to be disseminated everywhere so that we might become more informed.
The trend with these kind of pranks has skewed towards zombie-related humor the last few years. And there's apparently a group of hackers online who trade instructions on how to do it.
Apparently, by the way, in Oregon, I'm just passing this along. I'm not saying that Rick Emerson doesn't advocate, condone, promote, endorse, encourage any of this behavior. Apparently, in Oregon, the vast majority of these signs, the code is, in fact, just ODOT. It's just O-D-O-T. Did I show you the zombie stripper sign? The one that's closest to my house that actually says, "Caution, zombie strippers." All right. And that was I hear tell that was a listener of ours who did that.
Not surprise me.
I don't have any identifying information or anything. Here's Don Taylor.
The city of Albuquerque is ordering an apartment complex to inspect all 220 units after another carbon monoxide leak sent a family to the hospital. This would be the fifth carbon monoxide poisoning in a month. In mid-August, city inspectors paid a visit to the Mountain Vista apartment. They reported carbon monoxide leaking into 13 apartments from water heaters. All 13 units were closed until the management team fixed the problem. Earlier this week, another leak in another building sent another family to the hospital, according to officials who said the city has had enough. City spokesman T.J. Willem said, "We want them to look at the water heaters, ovens, and stoves to make sure that there isn't going to be anyone that is going to suffer from carbon monoxide poisoning in their units."
Well, first of all, this just in, apparently your hot water heater contains carbon monoxide. Who knew? Not me, certainly. Here's another question I have. You know, occasionally we'll talk about people having a radon leak in their home. What's radon?
I don't have no idea.
Why is it in your house?
I don't think it's actually in your house. I think
what does it do?
It's in the ground. But other than that, I don't know.
On a scale of 1 to 9, how certain are you that radon is, quote, in the ground?
2.5.
Okay. Awesome. You know, because you're only that certain, I don't want to know the truth. I almost don't want to have any explication or clarification now. It's infinitely more amusing just to have you. And also, by definition, that is the best answer you could come up with, like the fact that it's in the ground. And you're only 2.5 out of 9 sure of that.
Yeah.
But that's still, like, I can't even imagine what your second answer would be. You know, like what the runner-up is and how little faith you have in the truth of that.
Here's what I know about radon. It's bad for you.
Yes.
And you can buy these sensors that you put in your house to tell you if it's there.
Doesn't it sound
all I know.
It sounds like some sort of, like a robot overlord or something that would come to, you know, Radon, the target is within reach. What shall we do? Fire all. Or something. And then, you know, and then we all end up enslaved, I guess. All right, here's Don Taylor.
A small plane crashed into a house near the Aurora Airport Friday afternoon, and the pilot walked away with minor injuries. Marion County deputies said 70-year-old George Barman was doing touch-and-go landings at the Aurora Airport when the plane veered off course and crashed into a mobile home on North Cessna Street just after noon. I was thinking that was ironic, and then I realized, well, it's near the airport. So
okay,
I guess
so I guess the Cessna Street is to be expected. All right.
Barman was able to climb up on the roof and was taken to a local hospital, but should be fine, deputies said. He was listed in serious condition at OHSU. No one else was aboard. A small fire broke out, but was soon put out by emergency crews.
Does it seem like they let anybody fly a plane? I mean, if you own an airplane, I would imagine that there's tests. Here's a question. If you're getting your pilot license, is it like a car where, like, you're just up there with some guy, and the guy says, okay, fly straight until instructed to turn, bank sharply, or whatever.
See, this I can answer. I have a friend who is a pilot, and it took a long time. It takes a long time to become a pilot, to get a pilot.
So they don't just, like, even if you got your own plane, they don't just, like, hand those things out.
No, you have to take training, and then you have to log a certain amount of airtime with a licensed instructor in the plane with you. Before, and then you have to still pass a bunch of written and practical tests.
All right.
There's a lot you have to go through to actually get a pilot's license.
Fair enough.
But then again, then you're just good. And then you turn 70 and you're too old. And it's like you shouldn't even be driving, but you're still flying.
So it's like with cars, basically. No, you're fine, Pops. Yeah. Keep going.
And I don't want to say that because it's likely that you also have to, like, you know, Like you have to prove that you can still fly on a regular basis to keep your license, I'm sure. They really are pretty. They're a lot tougher about that than they are driving a car, which, of course, as we know, is, you know, you prove you can drive once when you're 16 years old and no one ever bothers to check again as long as you live.
That is true. I never really thought about that. They don't actually do any sort of follow-up to make sure that you're able to do anything at all, which, by the way, just given the anecdotal evidence that we see every day, I think there are many, many folks who suffer a serious degradation of those skills like 5 minutes after they get their license and could do with some retesting. This would also be a good opportunity for me to take back what I realize now that I have to withdraw like 99.99% of my complaints about the Oregon DMV because, you know, I was all twisted up about going to get my my emissions and my tabs or whatever. And it was just as it was the last time I got this done, which is, I guess, what, maybe 3-4 years ago, which I thought was like an aberration. But it took me longer to drive there than it actually did to get the actual thing done. I mean, I don't even think I had time to check my voicemail before the guy was like, all right, you're good to go. Here's your tabs. Next. And he was like, and here's the other thing. Not only was did I go in and they checked my emissions, they handed me my tabs, I was done. But everybody there was astonishingly courteous.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and as I said, this happened last time. But last time I thought it was just like an aberration. You know, there was some sort of an exception proving the rule. Because DMV guys, in my experience, have always just been such slow-ass, you know, dickweeds that I was just figuring that was what I would get saddled with. So I like to think that maybe Oregon is just ahead of the curve in that way, that it is that we are a state that has recognized the importance of having courteous DMV employees.
It is quite possible. I am only familiar with two states, California and here. And
which
California,
is an unfair comparison.
And the Los Angeles area DMVs are like one of the circles of hell.
I mean, they might as well just stab you in the eye when you're standing in line to get that done in L.A.
It's like I think that people standing in line at Ellis Island in like the 30s had it better than people who have to go to L.A. area DMVs.
Here's Don Taylor.
Democrats' majority in Congress is in jeopardy ahead of the midterm elections. The New York Times' Jeff Zeleny said House Speaker Nancy Pelosi wants to redirect money from endangered incumbents to lawmakers who appear to be the strongest candidates.
It, without a doubt, expresses a sense of urgency that Speaker Pelosi is trying to make clear to her members, as if they haven't already gotten the picture by this point, that the majority is in question, is being threatened.
How much does she look like Lucille on Arrested Development to you sometimes?
Oh, yeah.
Lucille Bluth?
I hadn't really
thought
about that.
You give her a cocktail and a mink stole and have her stumbling around a living room somewhere. Don't you? There's like a dead ringer. And I bet she's mean, too. I bet you cross her and you just end up whacked into hamburger somewhere.
I think that's pretty much the case with women in people in politics, particularly. But with women, I think they have to be especially extra brutal to get ahead. Oh, my God. Have you read the article about Sarah Palin in
Vanity Fair?
Vanity Fair?
I'm about halfway through it right now.
Oh, my Lord.
That's weird that you were reading that last night. Were you reading it last night?
No, I read it a couple of days ago. Yeah, over the weekend.
I started reading it last night, but then I had to get this, I had to get my questions prepared for sci-fi fantasy author Terry Brooks. We'll be interviewed on tomorrow's program. So I was doing some of my show prep, and I didn't get a chance to finish it. But I'm about halfway through.
Yeah,
she's just as evil and nuts as you thought she was.
I know, but you have this image in your head, and you think that you are sort of, stereotype. You're imagining sort of a cartoonish extreme of what you think Sarah Palin is like, and apparently that is all absolutely true, and then some.
Yeah.
Anyway, this fella says Democrats are looking to trim the field to concentrate on the strongest candidates.
At this point, 60 days out, they view the only way, to hold their majority, they know it'll be a very small majority if they do it all, is to throw some of these people overboard, if you will, and to focus on races that they can win.
Ah, it's fantastic. American politics. And that's a thing that you sort of hear about all the time where it's like, if you're some guy running for election or re-election somewhere and the party just decides that you're not viable, that's just a thing where the money faucet just gets turned off one day and like you just go in and none of the lights work and all your phones have been disconnected and you're just standing there in the middle of just a real big empty wondering how it happened.
Well, Jim, we've decided to go in a different direction.
Yes, a winning direction. Jim, you're not part of it.
Clear out your desk.
It's like you'll be, end up being like Kevin DeBrow where the band just leaves you behind at a rest station somewhere. you are listening to Legion of News right here at PDX.FM. Don't forget the Rick Emerson Show comes up today at 1 o'clock featuring an interview with Mr. Dave Mustaine from Megadeth. Also, Aaron Duran's Geek in the City with the Week in Geek today in Labor Day edition. Don Taylor's top five songs. Are these top five songs about jobs or about working?
About working.
Top five songs about working from Don Taylor. Double Snuff Watch, Corpse Watch, Job Watch, all that coming up a little after 1 o'clock at rickemerson.com via the greatness that is the Rick Emerson radio program. This is Legion of News, brought to you in part by Castalia Language Center, a small private school in downtown Portland that offers Spanish language classes for adults. Castalia focuses on conversation, not on, rote memorization or the verb conjugation or whatever, because just like radon, like I know it's a thing you don't want. Radon, it's bad. Don't do it. And so you don't want radon, but it's like the whole thing with the participle. I had somebody correct me in an email the other day, and it wasn't in a snarky way. But somebody said, maybe you want to change this part here to present perfect tense. And I just emailed back and I said, I don't know what that means. Do it yourself. I said, you just have to show me what that means. I have no idea what present perfect tense. Don, what is present perfect tense?
Not a clue.
See, I have no idea. And it's not like I can't speak correctly most of the time. I can. It just means I don't know what things are called. I don't know what rack and pinion steering really is either. It doesn't mean I can't operate my car. So you just need to know how to use the thing. You don't really need to see the math, understand how it works. That is a principle the Castalia Language Center understands. You can find out more about them at PortlandSpanish.com. Clara Grebel is the name of the woman who runs Castalia Language Center, and they are located downtown. They focus on class sizes of no more than 8 students. The environment is comfortable and relaxed, and you can find out more about it at PortlandSpanish.com. That is how you contact Castalia Language Center. This is Don Taylor.
Sarah Palin es un demonio de infierno.
Is she a woman from hell? No.
She's a demon from hell.
Demon from hell. There you go. All right.
Let's do our entertainment news.
Here's your entertainment news for Labor Day right here at Legion of News.
Authorities say former WWE wrestler Jim the Anvil Neidhart has been arrested on drug charges in Florida. A Hillsborough County Sheriff's arrest report says the 55-year-old was arrested Sunday. The report says Neidhart was yelling outside a gas station and was seen swallowing several pills. The report says he had OxyContin pills and methadone that were prescribed to someone else. The sheriff's office says the person whose name was on the pills had reported that her medication was stolen from her home. The Tampa Tribune reports that Neidhart is being held on charges of possession and trafficking in a controlled substance and burglary.
Well done.
Jail records show bond has not been set for him as of today, and it was not immediately known if he had an attorney.
Hey, I have a question about methadone, Don Taylor.
Okay.
So methadone is a drug? It's a substance, obviously. But I mean, is it a drug like a, like in the fun way?
I believe it's a synthetic heroin, and so,
I wonder if it feels like heroin.
I believe it does, but I think the reason that they give methadone to heroin addicts, and I could be completely wrong about this, but I believe that it's not addictive in the same way that opiates are. So it's the idea with methadone versus heroin is that you're actually trying to weed yourself out of the addiction.
So then, I wonder if somebody were to skip the heroin part of the equation and just go right to methadone, if that would be awesome.
I'm sure it would be.
Because you'd have nothing to compare it to, so you wouldn't be like, this is sort of like decaf. This sucks. You wouldn't be always negatively comparing it to the actual genuine article. And then also, if it's not as addictive or not in the same way, then it seems like you're going to skip that kind of unpleasantness.
Yeah.
So maybe we are, you know, this is the business of people trying heroin. Maybe people ought to just start trying methadone instead.
Is that your recommendation?
No, I'm not recommending it. I'm just saying, I'm just speculating. And I'm wondering where it is that you can, where one might be able to obtain that kind of a thing.
I don't know.
Probably controlled.
Yeah, I almost suggested that maybe we should get some and try it. And then I thought, well, no, that's not really a very good idea.
That seems like a bad idea, because aren't they arresting this guy for it?
And it's illegal.
Yeah.
So we shouldn't do that at all.
No.
But whenever we talk about something that sounds weird or interesting or fun and we're curious about, it's like, we should get somebody down here and we should do this. And then I realized not all of those things, you know, should actually be done.
Probably not, no. So please don't bring us any methadone.
No.
If you're planning on doing it, just give that to somebody else. Here's Don Taylor.
Cara DioGuardi is following Ellen DeGeneres and Simon Cowell out the door at American Idol. Her departure leaves just Randy Jackson, who has been with the singing contest from the start, the last judge standing. Steven Tyler and Jennifer Lopez are reported front runners for the panel. Entertainment mogul Simon Fuller, creator of the British show Pop Idol, that was the temple for the U.S. series he produces, called DioGuardi a standout songwriter whom he planned to work with in music for many years to come. DioGuardi, whose exit had been rumored, is a hit machine whose songs have been recorded by Gwen Stefani, Faith Hill, Mark Anthony, and others, including past Idol winners. So, no more of that.
Okay.
If you're watching TV tonight, we have a CBS fall preview at 8:30 p.m. on CBS. Jim Belushi and Jerry O'Connell, who star in the upcoming CBS courtroom dramedy, The Defenders, host a preview of the network's upcoming fall lineup.
Wait, hold on. The Defenders, really?
Yeah, I know.
That was the show from the 60s.
Yeah.
Is it supposed to be a kooky remake or an updating of that show, or are they just too goddamn lazy to come up with another title?
I don't know, but you tell me that Jim Belushi and Jerry O'Connell are starring in it together and all like
that. That's must-see television.
And I just can't stay far enough away.
Jesus, God. I mean, I could think maybe one of those guys if they were paired with somebody who offset them. But they're offsetting nothing there. Are they figuring that that's like a recessive gene thing? If they're both terrible, so the show somehow becomes good?
We may have talked about this before. I don't know if you've ever seen Jerry O'Connell on a talk show.
No.
One of the stupidest human beings I have ever seen in my life.
He seems dumb.
I mean, just jaw-droppingly stupid.
Yeah, he seems very, very non-bright.
I mean, so stupid, it becomes actually impressive that he is a fairly decent actor, because it's hard to believe he can actually memorize lines.
Well, maybe that's the thing where he himself has no personality, where he's just made out of, you know, he's just made out of a blankness and a vacuum.
Also new, at 8 a.m. this morning, well, you may have missed it this morning, but it'll be on again, I'm sure, on PBS, The Cat in the Hat knows a lot about that. Martin Short provides the voice of the Cat in the Hat in a new weekday animated children's series that sneaks in science facts while following the wacky adventures of neighbors Sally and Nick with Dr. Seuss's fabulous feline. In the opening episode, Sally and Nick do the bee dance and learn how to make honey, and a purple martin goes missing from their backyard.
I don't understand the deal with the wired. I mean, maybe this is in his will or something. Maybe it's like his widow. I don't understand these guys who die, and then all of their stuff just gets hoarded out once they're dead, you know, in ways that they probably never intended. So it seemed, and there doesn't seem to be any way to stop it.
Theodore Geisel's widow really held tight reins on everything for a very long time. And then Ron Howard talked her into letting him do, like, The Cat in the Hat.
Right.
And,
so it's like once she got a taste of that royalty check, then
I think so. I think the family just started
going,
hey, the money's nice.
See, but that's the thing, is that's why you can never protect it from your jackass family, because they always get in meddle with things. So, and even the artists who clearly wouldn't want that done after their death, it's like they don't get to have any say in it. So they need to figure out some way. There needs to be just some one, like, grumpy guy somewhere that everybody can will their stuff to. A guy who just enjoys telling people no. And then you just will him your intellectual property. Yeah.
You'd probably be good at that.
And then when Ron Howard comes knocking, I just go, no, get bent. And then just send him away.
Hoarders returns to A&E with a profile of Adelia, whose hoarding already has cost her a previous home, as well as her marriage and relationship to her children. Also, a woman named Terry, whose hoarding is so bad it causes a physically unhealthy environment for her asthma-stricken children. I still can't believe you don't watch Hoarders.
Yeah, I think I might have the shock of self-recognition, though, and I be yet another unpleasant glimpse into my own future.
And Anthony Bourdain, no reservations, celebrates the 100th episode by returning to Paris, and Bourdain explains how the series started, with celebrated chef Eric Rippert as the guest. Stops include dinner at La Tête dans les Olives. I can't speak French.
That's okay, but I didn't know that it was inaccurate.
A visit to Les Chateaubriand, sampling neighborhood fare along Rue Milfitard, and last but not least, a visit to the renowned L'Atelier.
Fantastic. There you go. And with that, we bring down the curtain on another episode of Legion of News, which comes to you each and every weekday right here on PDX-FM. It originates from the studios of the Emerson News Network. At the news desk is Don Taylor. Advanced technology magic provided by Thomas Gill. Executive producer Bruce Agler and chief of staff is Cheryl Kanakoa. The Rick Emerson Show, today featuring our exclusive interview with Megadeth frontman Dave Mustaine, begins next at rickemerson.com. This has been another exciting Labor Day edition of
Legion of News on PDX.FM.